Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
In a darkened room in Campbell Hall, the WILL Pledge Team begins planning the October Fun Drive.
Hey, who took the last jelly donut?
Okay, everyone. It's time to plan our October Pledge Drive.
So how many days? I say we do the usual 8. What do you say?
Let's try something different.
Like?
Let's make it shorter.
We still have to raise enough to pay for the programs. I want people to have the services they expect from us.
It'll work. We can ask people to help by mailing a gift before the drive begins.
Hey, the website, willpledge.org. We can ask people to pledge early online.
I know. We can build a member match fund, then use it on air to encourage other listeners to make their pledges.
I like it. You guys work out the details. Now, where's that donut box?
Stay tuned for further details on AM 580 WILL Urbana.
Good afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our producers are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal. Henry Frain is at the controls. My name is Rita Schulte, and I'm sitting in today for Celeste Quinn, who's on a well-deserved vacation. Our guest today is Larry Keller, president of Wild Birds Incorporated of Champaign, home of feeders, birdhouses, birding supplies, and all manner of things associated with birds and bird watching. Questions about birds or birding are welcome. Our number is 333-9455 or toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Last time, I was listening online on some of the archived interviews, and the last time you were here, you were speaking about the summer birds and the different migrations going through, and now the seasons are changing, so it's time for fall migrations.
Right.
So who's in our backyard right now?
Pretty much everybody that was coming through in the spring migration is starting to turn around and heading south.
They're turning that van around and they're taking everybody
exactly.
home.
Exactly. Okay. So we've got certain species that start in mid to late August will start moving out and coming through in larger numbers. But the only downside is the fall migration, you really don't notice the birds as much as you do during the spring migration. Mm-hmm. Part of the problem is with that is that during the fall migration, they're heading south and they've got a purpose. They're simply just to get south.
Mm-hmm.
During the spring migration, they're coming through, they're pairing up, they're looking for territories to nest and to raise their family for the summertime. So there's a little bit more activity during the springtime than there is in the fall time. Mm-hmm. Right now, we've had the orioles coming through real thick. The hummingbirds are very, very thick
right
now. They're kind of an exception to the rule. We have more luck with hummingbird feeding during the fall of migration than we usually do during the spring migration. Warblers are coming through. Some of the waterfowl are moving through, and some of the shorebirds are moving through. So things are starting to filter through, but you might not notice them as often in the backyard during the fall as you will in the spring.
Are we getting are any of the birds coming through, or are they not ordinary birds that wouldn't ordinarily be here because of the storms on the big storms on the east and west coast? Are we seeing some birds who might be tourists that wouldn't ordinarily be here?
Some rarities. That happens year-round.
Okay.
You never know what the winds are going to blow in. So from time to time, we do have rarities that do show up, yes.
Was that why that enormous crane-looking bird was in my backyard? We've got a pond behind our house, and back in July, we had that one weekend where there were horrible, horrible storms came through, and we looked out the back window, and there was a bird that looked like it was close to 6 feet tall, and this wonderful red head with a unhappy frog in a very long beak, and I said, that must be a crane.
Right.
Too big for a heron.
More than likely, it was a big sandhill crane.
Mm-hmm.
They do pass through eastern Illinois, mostly in Indiana is where they're passing through on their migration routes. So things such as storms like that and heavy fronts coming through can blow birds off course. You might see them in your backyard for a few days, and then they're gone and back on track again.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was almost like an invasion of one bird. We've never seen anything quite that
big. It does happen.
It was impressive. He didn't look too unhappy when he found the place where the frogs were.
Right.
Looked like he was going to settle in for a while. Harriet, our producer, gave me something kind of interesting that I probably should have shared with you before we went on the air. And I just wondered how often it occurs where somebody actually has an opportunity to identify a new species. It was a species of bird. It's not around here, but it was found in India. Now, will that have an impact on folks in this area, maybe who are doing one of the big years where they go and look for birds?
anytime there's a new discovery in the ornithological societies, it's big news. People generally think that everything has been discovered, and it's simply not the case, even in something that is so common as birds. Even mammals are finding new ones from time to time also. So there are things that are being discovered, and the biggest news is usually in people who are really into ornithology and into the birding aspect. Last year, of course, the ivory-billed woodpecker rediscovery down in the Cache River area was the big news of the year. And so everybody sort of had a buzz about that for a long period of time. So anytime there's a new discovery, it is pretty interesting.
Yeah, but just like I'm like everybody else, I assume that there's all the birds somebody is going to find will be found, and now we're losing. But it's interesting to find that new species are being discovered. Our guest today is Larry Keller, president of Wild Birds Incorporated of Champaign. We encourage your calls if you want to know a little bit more about the birds in your backyard. Our number is 333-9455, or if you're out of the area, 1-800-222-9455. And we do have one call here, or one question here. It's about heated bird baths. And the questioner said, do birds really need them? And do they have to be raised? Can they sit on a patio? And just how do you clean a heated bird bath?
Heated bird baths, you will typically see more use off of a heated bird bath in the wintertime than you will a regular bird bath during the spring and summertime. A lot of times when, of course, the temperatures are below freezing, water is at a major premium. And when the birds can find a heated bath in the yard, you will get a ton of use, and you'll see a lot of different species that you wouldn't expect to see there during the wintertime. As far as cleaning those, you simply clean them the exact same way as you do with a regular bird bath. You're going to want to clean them almost daily. You want to make sure that there's no bacteria or mold growth going on inside there because of the heated element part of it. The biggest thing is placement of the bird bath. Wintertime proposes a lot of problems with aerial predation for birds, especially from hawks. And so you want your bird bath near some sort of cover where these birds can come into the bird bath, get a drink, and then go back up into the cover for safety.
Well, you had mentioned hawks, and we'll come back to that in a second, but we do have a caller on line number one in Champaign. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
I had a question, or two questions, actually. The first is, on my windowsill a couple days ago, there was a small bird that was grayish and had yellow sort of under its wings and on it somewhere, and it was maybe 5 inches long, and it was really content just to sit there on my windowsill, even though I knew, I mean, it saw me. And so I was wondering if you might have any guesses about what that is. It looked unusual to me.
Did he have wing bars, like black or white wing bars?
I just didn't take it all in enough. I know it, you know, he had dark, and it, you know, it was grayish, brownish, dark, and I didn't know if was it some kind of chickadee.
Probably, more than likely, it was one of the warbler species. The tough thing about identification in the fall is that there's no longer the breeding plumage. And so telling the difference will take tons of questions that I've got this brownish-gray bird with a little yellow in the fall time, and it can be one of dozens of different species. So, yeah, it's very hard to say during this time of year.
Okay, but you would guess broadly a warbler.
Probably a warbler. You might be describing an immature goldfinch also. They're very, very numerous right now.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
And then the second question was, would you have any sort of suggestions for a rank beginner bird watcher? You know, what you can do in terms of just backyard.
As far as backyard, there's basically four things that you want to provide. You want to provide the food. And there's a wide range of types of foods that you can do, types of feeding, type of situations. And that's going to vary from different times of the year from one to the next. We're coming up in the fall and winter time, so, of course, you want to have a type of feeder that's going to allow the cardinals to feed at. So perching area is a very important thing when you buy a feeder. You want to make sure the bird can fit up there appropriately. Another feeder that is very, very popular are ground feeders. And simply just a little tray that's on legs that sits on the ground, and it keeps the seed at a ground level that appeals to a wide variety of different bird species. And during the winter time, it's really nice because it keeps that seed above the snow line.
Oh, okay.
So, and then, of course, you want to provide water. A simple bird bath near the feeding station is fine. Don't put it too close to the feeding station because you don't want any shells or anything falling into the bird bath causing problems there.
Okay.
And then, of course, housing during the spring and summertime. For example, house wrens, you can put up several wren houses around the yard. You're going to have the little guys coming in usually the first part of May.
Okay,
for Central Illinois.
And they would nest there.
And they would nest, and they're going to eat a ton of insects out of your yard, so they're a great little bird to have around. And then, of course, shelter is the fourth thing, and that's simply what type of habitat you have in your yard. Evergreens, of course, for Central Illinois are great because it's providing shelter during the wintertime as well as during the spring and summertime.
Okay. So, and if I don't have evergreens, I have a deciduous, big deciduous, so I don't,
right.
I guess that's...
No. Yeah, that will work. It will provide some shelter. A great way right after the Christmas holiday is to take a Christmas tree that somebody's used or yourself and then simply stand it up outside near your feeding station. Even if you lay it on the ground, you're providing a major habitat shelter for those birds.
Okay.
And you'll be amazed how many dozens of birds will use that throughout the day.
Well, that's nice because I always feel sad when I put my tree out.
Yep, exactly. So you can recycle it and make some habitat for the wintertime then.
Put to good use.
Yes.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
Thanks for calling.
That's a great idea. We have a caller on line number 2 from Savoy. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. A couple of years ago, I went over to Clarksville to see the Eagles with you.
Okay.
Are you going to do that again this year?
We are planning on it. There are
when
several.
Will it be?
It's usually the last weekend of January is when that field trip is.
Okay.
And a lot of it depends on the Corps of Engineers have been doing a lot of work on the lock and dams up and down the river over there.
Oh, okay.
And so we've had to cancel a few years because using dynamite and trying to watch bald eagles at the same time just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And the other factor that's involved is weather. So we have to make sure that the weather is going to be conducive for eagles to come down the river. If we're very, very mild this winter again, it's a possibility it could be canceled again.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. So the eagles don't like the mild winter?
Well, they do. Okay. But the thing that it does is it keeps them north, and they don't migrate south.
They don't need to come.
Right.
Okay.
They will migrate as far as they can find food.
Mm-hmm.
So if the rivers are still open up in the Wisconsin, Minnesota areas, they're not coming down. Mm-hmm. There's still a few that will show up, but not the massive numbers like we can see.
Mm-hmm.
We've been in one location at one time and seen over 500 eagles just standing in
Ooh.
One spot. So, yeah,
wow.
Very, very neat.
Wow. Well, and one of the things that I had noticed our backyard is it's not new, but there's not a lot of plantings, and we live in a condominium, so there's no private backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Our birds are split between chipping sparrows, hawks, and Canada geese because there's a pond behind the house.
Okay.
And there was a time when we did have a number of doves in the neighborhood, and they are all gone.
Right.
And there's some nice fat baby hawks fledging.
Right.
And I'm assuming we were trying to figure out just exactly what kind of hawk that was because she's pale on the underbelly.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't really sure that she was too small, I think, to be a cooper or a redtail.
Redtail, right. Yeah, next size down is going to be the cooper's hawk. And they've got the longer tail. You usually notice the banding on the tail.
Yes.
You'll see a light-colored breast, usually some mottling inside there, some brown. But they're an accipiter. They feed on birds on the wing.
Yes.
And the doves are slow. They're coming off the ground usually.
Yeah.
They're a very easy target, and they will feed on those quite readily.
Yeah, and she's moved from doves to rabbits now.
Yes. Yep. You'll see quite a bit of that.
It's a supermarket back behind the house. We have a caller on line number 1 from Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for the topic. Wow, there's so many things. I would like to say people should just keep their eyes open when you're looking for birds. You'll be really shocked where you will see them, especially while you're driving. You don't want to wreck your car, but it's a great opportunity to see birds. I saw a great blue heron off of North Prospect Avenue in one of the drainage ponds where there are certainly plenty of Canada geese in the last couple of years, some mallards.
Right.
But more importantly, every 2 or 3 years, I actually see an immature eagle somewhere in Illinois.
Yes.
I've seen them between here and Rantoul, and my wife and I were cutting down St. Mary's Road to get over to Urbana, and we saw an immature eagle flying towards the graveyard on Florida Avenue, which was just incredible. Could you tell me, are there more wild turkeys than the ones in Urbana that visit town that you've heard of? And then I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
The wild turkey population in the state of Illinois has exploded over the last decade. Part of that has to do with the reintroduction that the state has done by bringing in populations to certain areas, and the success of their nesting is what is attributed to that. Champaign County holds a very nice population of wild turkeys. You get into areas such as the Sangamon River Valley area. Mahomet has very large flocks of wild turkeys there. You start to get into Vermilion County, Danville area has very, very large flocks of wild turkeys. So their numbers are really increasing quite drastically. And as their numbers increase, those populations are going to start to spread out. And then you're going to start seeing turkeys in places where you wouldn't think you'd see turkeys.
Like Windsor Road.
Like Windsor Road. The debate's still out whether those are true wild turkeys or if they were released. It's kind of hard to say. But I know, like outside of St. Joe, on 150, it's not uncommon to see turkeys walking around in the fields out there near the wooded areas. So, like I say, as the populations increase, you're going to see them to start to expand.
Wow. One question that I had back to hawks, is it legal in the state of Illinois to hold a falconer's license?
Yes.
It is legal?
Yes.
So as long as you're licensed,
you may. Exactly. Yeah, there's an apprenticeship that you have to go through and an appropriate channels that you have to go through for the licensing through the state, but you can hold them, yes.
So is there some place, if somebody was interested in learning more about that, do they just contact the State Department of Natural Wildlife?
Yeah, exactly. Department of Natural Resources. That's where you want to check with the state, and they should have a listing. And there's also different clubs and stuff throughout the state where they can get information from.
Okay. Because when I remember being a kid growing up in Will County, and one of my cousins had found a hawk that had slammed right into the barn for reasons we couldn't figure. And he worked on a wing a little bit, and it, fortunately for the bird and for Dick, it wasn't broken. It just kind of came together. And that bird was, I wouldn't call it a family pet, but she did a yeoman's job of keeping things out of the barn.
Yep.
And she was great to have around, scared my Aunt Mary a great deal, which leads me to another question about hawks, since they are so plentiful. We did have a volunteer in here during our last fund drive who was very concerned about her smaller dogs, putting them out in the yard, because apparently her neighborhood had three pretty good-sized hawks nesting and foraging.
Right. The largest hawk typically you're going to have in the neighborhood that's going to be either nesting or feeding, or we're seeing both happen, is the red-tailed hawks. Your dogs and cats typically are not going to have a problem. Birds have a flight weight that they have to be able to obtain, and that includes when they grab something as far as prey, that they can get back up in the air to an appropriate location for safety, for their own safety, get off the ground to feed. So typically a dog or a cat's not going to fall in that range. It's a little too heavy for them, and they know it. They're usually very, very rare to see attacks on that.
So the dachshund is safe in the backyard.
Yes.
This is good news. We have a caller on line one. Thank you for calling. Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
You mentioned the turkeys, and I know that Urbana's been getting a lot of ribbing about the turkeys. They would come in. We saw them, I don't know, about a year ago, coming through our yard and eating. They would peck at bird seed that's fallen down from our bird feeder and were not interested in being approached.
Right.
But their behavior changed. And last spring, I mean, I really thought they were pretty cool walking through my yard. I was pretty special. But last spring, I was one of the people who had an interaction with them that really concerned me. You expect wild creatures to act like wild creatures, and these are big birds. And I was out walking in a neighborhood street, and suddenly they were right next to me, like within a foot. The two toms were right next to me, and I thought, this is weird. And they wouldn't back off. I'm not expecting a big bird with a big beak to be up close, and I don't know what turkey behavior is supposed to be. And I thought, what is going on here? These guys didn't just walk up to me. They ran to catch up with me. Now, previously, I had been working on a gutter up on a ladder, and I noticed one of the neighborhood kids rollerblading. He's was a preteen, and he was rollerblading up and down the street. And on one of his passes, I suddenly realized that the turkeys were chasing him, and they were gaining on this kid rollerblading.
Oh, no.
Those turkeys were going flat out. Now, I've heard the phrase flat out. These turkeys were flat out. Their heads were down, their tails were up, their legs were pumping, and they were gaining on this kid. And
oh,
I thought,
wow.
You know, if I were that kid, I'd be a little unsure what's going on here.
Right.
It's a pretty visual image there, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And somebody had said to me he thought that maybe people were hand-feeding the turkeys. And I would just suggest to people that you not do that with these birds because they are big. And I was thinking, you know, if I had a little kid that was the same size as those turkeys with the kid's eyes at the same level as their beaks, I'd be a little concerned, especially if these birds are going to chase things that are moving. And so it's just a caveat. I thought it was really special to have the turkeys in my yard, but I didn't hand feed them. So apparently, some people seem to be, because they certainly weren't afraid of me, and I couldn't get them to leave me alone when I was walking. I even took my sweatshirt off. As I said, it was in the springtime, and I flipped it at them multiple times, snapped it at them, and said, shoo, and they wouldn't leave me alone. I must have walked for almost a block backwards, trying to get them to back off, and they wouldn't. Until finally another motorist got out, and then he was bigger than I am, and had a deeper voice. He said, okay, guys, move on, and they did.
Right.
Yeah, see, the imprint type that can happen with wildlife is definitely a problem. If you have people who are feeding these birds, for example, that imprint on humans can occur, especially younger birds. Another thing I think that we saw with the problem over there is that most of this occurred during the courtship and mating season. So you had some very aggressive behavior by these birds, and simply they're trying to protect territories and trying to protect mates. And that's going to happen with any bird species. We just don't simply see it on the level that we did with these turkeys, because most birds are not the size of a 20-pound turkey running around that's very visible. So a lot of that did occur. What really brought it about, it's really hard to say as far as an exact answer. But yeah, people, if you want to enjoy the wildlife, invite them to your habitat in your backyard. That's great. That's one thing. But interacting in a close association with them is never a good thing. It doesn't matter what species it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'd recommend to people to be careful about getting too friendly and making them too tame.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
It's like the bear. It's not as bad as bears in parks.
You know, right.
Bears are fine to look at from a distance, but you don't want to encourage them to think that humans are something to dominate.
Right. Yeah. Well, they associate you with something that they need to maintain life, and that's food. Mm-hmm. And once they associate that at all costs, they're going to make sure they encounter you and engage you for that particular item. So that's, you're very, very correct on your assumptions.
So I'm hoping some more really wild ones come, and now I'm glad that the semi-tame ones are gone.
I would have to assume that sometime in the future we're going to hear more problems with them and more concerns. So you're probably, your wishes will come true.
Thanks for calling. Bye.
Now, are the wild turkeys, are birds that big, just like the little birds, where their metabolism is so high they run through volumes of food many times their weight?
Right. They do feed very heavily. Yeah,
okay.
They're not going to feed as high as smaller birds because their metabolic rates on smaller species, and this is a general rule in the animal kingdom, metabolic rates are higher the smaller you are.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to run through those quite as much food, but they do forage all day long, and so they're looking for food pretty much all day long when they're awake.
So they, you know, you look like a snack bar, they're going to go.
Yeah, and if somebody's been hand-feeding them corn, there's the association starts to become that, okay, everybody's going to have corn for me, so they're going to follow them.
Uh-oh.
And that could be what the case was over in Urbana.
Mm-hmm.
However, some of the other behavior that we had discovered that was going on over there was some of the fanning and attacking the reflections in windows,
mm-hmm.
Car doors, for example. So see, that's a courtship and a mating ritual, and that's what they were doing there. So maybe they were trying to fend off humans also, or just keeping a close eye. I think a little bit of both was occurring, though.
Okay.
Okay.
We've got a caller on line number 2 from Urbana. Thank you for calling. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a quick question and maybe a slight comment. Mr. Keller, you're an avid promoter of bird feeding, I gather. And also, you are also an avid crow hunter or crow shooter, I believe. Now, in view of the fact that crows are declining in numbers in Illinois due to the West Nile virus and also their habits of lifelong mating, are you planning to be shooting crows again this fall?
Arlo, we've had this discussion personally, and I don't think we need to carry on that discussion any further. You know where I'm at. You know how to get a hold of me. And trying to establish your position publicly, I don't think is appropriate. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Once again, our guest today is Larry Keller, president of Wild Birds Incorporated of Champaign. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and our number to call in is 333-9455, or if you're out of the area, 1-800-222-9455. Our subject this afternoon is birds and birding, the little feathered creatures that you see in your backyard this fall. What are they? How long will they be here? How can you attract more as the goes through as the seasons progress and the birds kind of take their migration through the area? If you have a phone call or have a question, please give us a call at the 333-9455 number or 1-800-222-9455. Last time you were on, I was listening to that interview, and you were talking about wrens, that they will make dummy nests in different parts.
Right.
And I was sort of wondering, we have a chipping sparrow who has developed an unfortunate attachment to the top of the downspout. And he will build a nest over the top of the downspout and then call and call and call. And up to this point, he hasn't had any takers ever to nest over that downspout. Now, whether we were kind of wondering if he's just not doing things correctly, because it seems to be coming back every year. Now, maybe it is son of downspout bird by this time, because it's been about 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. But it's a little male, little red-headed chipping or tan-headed chipping sparrow.
Right.
We never see a nest in there, but we see the dummy.
Right.
Well, do they do much the same thing?
No, not at all.
So
not
he's just
so
not able to attract
mates.
They're smarter
his
than
mate,
he is.
Either something's happened there or you know, there's some mortality has occurred with one of the mates or something. Yeah, it's completely different than what the house wrens do. Yep.
Because the neighbor opted to put we share a building, put covers on the downspout or on the guttering, and we noticed that the bird will sit there on top and desperately attempt to build this nest in much the same space.
Right, right.
Not good behavior for a bird.
Exactly. And you see that with other species, too. Doves, for example, they always build in the craziest places. Robins are real common. House finches are real common, always having to build up on a wreath that's up on the door or something like that. So it doesn't make much sense to us. Right. They obviously think it's a good location.
Like,
but
or
sometimes
6 feet into my dryer vent. Yeah,
exactly.
That was a fun one to clean out.
Exactly.
Yeah, we have a caller from Urbana on line number one. Hello.
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 Yeah, I was glad to hear your conversation about the turkeys and their behavior. I've had quite a bit of experience up and down. We live on Anderson Street. The first time we saw them, there were four of them in a regal procession down the middle of Anderson Street with cars backed up on both ways. But they saw some red berries in our lawn and hurried over for that, and the traffic moved again. I went out and got a flash picture of them, but that spooked them.
Right.
They took off down the street faster than any human could run, I think.
Oh.
Some officer is quoted in the paper saying, if we can catch the darn things. their speed on foot is really something impressive.
Yes, it is.
The next time we saw them, the four of them were drinking out of our bird water behind our house. And something spooked them there again, and about four steps of running, and they were airborne, and we watched them until they landed in the top of a very tall sycamore tree about a full block beyond our house.
Mm-hmm.
They perched up there, and I don't know how long they stayed, but anybody who tries to catch those lively creatures is going to have a real job. Just recently, I had a little standoff with a couple of them that wanted to follow me when I was out walking, and I found that by just standing and not moving, just watching them very carefully, they didn't want to come further toward me. And eventually they just turned away and went on about their grazing.
Right.
So I think if people will not run from them, but just hold their ground and not threaten them either, just be there until they get tired of watching.
And I think between the city and the county and the police departments and animal control, I think they've got the situation has been resolved. So it's something that we're not going to have to worry about too much here in the future anyway.
We've enjoyed the exposure to these unusual creatures.
Yeah.
Yep, definitely.
Well,
all right.
Thank you for calling.
Sure.
We got another call on line two from Urbana. Hello.
Hello. Yes, I'm just turned on my radio, and I'm appalled at people being afraid of those turkeys. Now, remember we had about a quarter or a half inch of snow in January, and on the neighbor's driveway, I looked out of the bedroom window, and this was about 6 in the morning, and here were 2 big turkeys in my neighbor's yard, so I quickly dressed and ran downstairs with the camera. I have several pictures, the 2 big turkeys and the 2 little ones, juniors, not little birds, but half the size. And I was so excited, and I've got all kinds of pictures in there. And then pretty soon, about 10 o'clock in the morning, the mailman rang my doorbell. He said, "You have turkey tracks on your driveway." I said, "Yes, I know, because at about 7 o'clock this morning, I was taking pictures of them on my neighbor's lawn."
Well, that was quite a treat that you got then.
Oh, it was, and they were around all winter and spring. Of course, winter, we didn't have much snow even after that. And I went out to a wild bird place and got, I think I got cracked corn for them. They hadn't heard about the Urbana turkeys yet, and these, I was one of the first ones, and I was just crazy about them. But all of a sudden, they disappeared. And then I read or heard that people have called the police about them. And then these 2 little junior turkeys, I don't know what, I considered these older ones being their moms because they didn't have waddles like a normal turkey, you know.
Right, yeah, they've pretty much have rounded, from what I understand, they've rounded up all of them. I think there might be one still left that they know of, but I've heard the other day that they had had him, and I think they've rounded them all up, so.
Why have they done that? What do you mean all of them? There were just 2 adults and 2 juniors.
Right, they had all 4 of them, and I'm pretty sure that they've taken them all out of the area.
Well, when you say all of them, how many have they caught?
4 that I know of.
Well, that's what it started out.
Yep, exactly.
Well, why did they have to round them up?
Too many complaints.
Isn't that awful?
Yes, it is.
Why, it's just terrible of people to, and oh, this is one of my cute story. I had one chair I just happened to sit in on my front porch, and there's some bushes around, and my cat, it was a sunny afternoon, and my cat was sitting on my lap, and all of a sudden, a turkey walked across the step to the porch, and the cat jumped off, and I screamed at the cat, and the turkey went straight up in the air, straight up, and landed in the tree, and the cat stood there just wondering, and I've never seen a turkey fly, but it had wings like an airplane.
Yeah, they can take off, but yeah, it's been quite the conversation for the Urbana area, so
well,
it's been...
I think people in Urbana, and I'm in Urbana, just near the intersection of Reef and Florida, and I've enjoyed them all spring.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you've had some wonderful experiences with these birds and have some great pictures to share, and I want to thank you for your call this afternoon. We've got another caller on line number 3 from Urbana. Hello? Yes.
Hello. Oh, hi. I have a question about feeding hummingbirds.
Okay.
All summer long, I've had a feeder out and had a lot of hummingbirds come. And then just recently, a friend of mine said I should take the feeder down to encourage them to fly south for the winter. Is that true?
No, that's a very old wives' tale.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it used to be that everybody swore up and down that Labor Day you had to take the hummingbird feeders down because they would not leave, and that's simply not true. The instinct to migrate is probably the single strongest instinct besides survival that a bird has. You simply having a simple food source in your backyard does not mean anything to that bird. He will migrate when he's ready to migrate.
Okay.
And usually for central Illinois, usually mid to late October is the big time when they're finally gone. What we usually tell people is give it about a week. If you've seen no hummingbirds for about a week to 10 days, you're pretty well safe to go ahead and take the feeder down until next spring.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
And our number again is 333-9455 or 1-800-222-4700. 800-222-9455. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and we're here today with Larry Keller, president of Wild Birds Incorporated of Champaign. Our subject today is birds, bird watching, migrating birds through our area here. And the last lady who called spoke about hummingbirds. And if you wanted to set up a hummingbird feeder in a place that you were pretty sure your cat wouldn't get a hold of, but yet it would still attract hummingbirds. We have a house cat, and she doesn't get out much, but you just know that, you know, that open screen, and you know, it's not going to hold them when they're in full run.
Right. Yeah, hummingbird feeders, you want to obviously put them in a place where you can enjoy them and see them. So up close to the windows or the patio area is very good. Shade is best. It's not a total necessity, but it does help as far as with the freshness of the nectar. You have to clean and change the nectar, clean the feeder, change the nectar every 3 to 4 days. If we're extremely hot in the 90-plus temperatures, you might want to do that every other day to keep that nectar fresh, because you don't want the mold and bacteria to start to grow in the feeder. Usually, you don't want the feeder lost in the color of all your flowers, so you want the feeder standing by itself. Your feeder should have some red on it, and that's what's going to attract the hummingbird when they're flying around the yard. They'll see that red key on it, then you get to enjoy them.
Cool. We have got a caller on line number 4 in Terre Haute. Hello?
Hi, this is Aaron in Terre Haute.
Hello.
My question is about the migration of the hummingbirds.
Okay.
When they fly away, do they do they just like go to the top of the treetops high in the sky, and they go like for days and days without stopping? Or has anyone, do you have knowledge about that?
Yes, actually.
How do they migrate, and how far do they fly each day?
Right. The flight patterns, and this is true with almost every bird that migrates, not just hummingbirds. Hummingbirds specifically, they've been noted as several thousand feet above sea level.
Wow.
They've been seen during migration periods on certain mountain ranges out west especially. So they can be thousands of feet, and we're talking, 4,000 to 8,000 feet high migrating. Migrations usually occur in short bursts, and they usually follow weather patterns such as cold fronts coming through. Favorable winds will also help in migration, so you'll see big pushes then. And then you also have to remember almost every single bird will migrate at night, especially during full moon phases. They use the alignment of the moon and the stars to navigate and on their migration routes. A lot of that is still a big mystery on how they do it. Hummingbirds are very unique because the ruby-throated hummingbirds that we have, they all congregate into the Gulf of Mexico region before they actually fly over the Gulf to the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. So people who live along the Gulf Coast area, when they have their feeders out, it's not uncommon to have 40, 50, 60 hummingbirds at one time filling up on those hummingbird feeders because they're getting ready for the big flight over. And there's been a lot of reports, the oil rigs that are out in the Gulf will have birds drop by and visit and rest for a while before carrying on their migration. There are actually bird counts that go on out there on those locations. Also, ships that are out in the Gulf will see birds come through and land on the ships for a while before they continue their migration pattern into Central and South America.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
We've got a caller on line number 1 in Urbana. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Could you tell me when wrens come and go, so I'll know when to take down my houses, or do they stay?
Typically, and you're talking the house wrens, the house wrens will show up the last week of April, first week of May for Central Illinois, and then they're usually leaving somewhere in the end of August to the middle part of September. Right now, you're pretty well safe to go ahead and take your houses down and clean them out and put them away for the year. They're done.
Right.
They're definitely not nesting anymore. You might still see a few in the area, but you're not going to really hear them simply because they're not doing courtship or anything this time of year. And so they're not as vocal, and they've pretty much have left the area for the most part.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
And I think we have time for at least one more call. Line number 2 in Urbana. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. I'm interested in turkeys, and I've heard several reports of turkeys becoming aggressive, that they put their head down and people think they're going to charge at that point. Is the head down an indication that they're going to charge? And if they charge, what do? I can't believe they would really harm somebody. It's Do you know anything about that?
Well, all the reports, I don't think anybody was hospitalized from a turkey attack. So some of these reports of what was occurring, I think the birds were getting very close to people. If they're going to do anything, you have to remember turkeys are fowl, and they're going to act very, very similar to such as a barnyard rooster. If they're going to be aggressive, they're going to fan up, they're going to run at you, they might peck, they might spur you. That sort of behavior is what we would consider an aggressive behavior. As far as my knowledge, nobody had that happening to them over there. So as far as what people constitute as aggressive behavior, it's in the eye of the beholder.
Well, we were wondering if this usually happens when a person is walking. Well, there was a case of one person walking with a cane. There was another person running that was reported as nipping at their heels. What if a person, we've also had reports of people that are running, stopped, and walked back the other way, and the turkey would follow along with them. And they'd turn around, and the turkey would follow along with them, and then they'd lose interest and walk away.
Right.
So what if this person didn't treat this as an aggressive behavior, but as in a more of the turkey just wanting to follow them or chase them because it's a chase.
Right.
I don't know if the actual just stopping and calming down for a minute and just ignoring the turkeys.
I think that we had the problem that we had there was that you're talking an urban setting, I'm sorry, a suburban setting, and you're having wildlife showing up that is not very common. People are not used to it. Yeah, exactly. And so when you have something new like that, and especially something that's large like that, it's very intimidating. And so people are going to perceive things differently on how things are actually occurring. Mm-hmm. Like I say, an actual attack, the only attack that I heard of was one gentleman had his car scratched up because one of the toms was seeing his reflection in the car door because the sunlight was just right. And so he was bouncing off the car pretty heavily and trying to spur at it because he obviously thought it was a competitor for mating purposes. So that's what would constitute that. And I don't think any of that really occurred anywhere, not that I know of. But like I said, the issue has been resolved. It's not going to be a problem if people want to perceive it as a problem. And for the people who enjoyed having them around the area, sorry, but they're gone. So
yeah,
that's the way
I
it goes.
Yep. They're lots of fun.
Thanks for the call.
Okay,
thank
bye.
You. Bye-bye. I've got a question now before we have to go to the settlement prices. We had the occasion to see an entire colony flat on the sand of gulls. They look like your classic herring gull. Every single one of the 200 birds was facing in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
What was going on there?
Probably most bird species, whatever activity they're doing that are in flocks,
mm-hmm.
will typically be going into the wind.
Oh, okay.
A lot of that has to do with feeding purposes, but it also mm-hmm. is for takeoff,
for
flight.
Takeoff.
Exactly.
So because
yep.
the wind was relatively calm enough
right.
so that we probably
didn't
ignored
notice it.
It.
Exactly.
It was
exactly.
still very important
yeah.
to them.
More than likely, that's exactly what it was.
Because it was funny to watch them land and orient themselves in neat little rows
mm-hmm.
looking and
right.
We're just used to seeing them screeching and clawing at
right.
you, or not clawing really, but flying at you for crackers yeah. and whatever, and there they were all lined up.
Right. If you see a large flock of geese in a field where they're feeding, they're typically walking into the wind.
Oh, okay.
And you'll notice
I'll
that.
Pay attention.
It's not 100%. Not
mm-hmm.
everybody's going to be doing it, but typically they're feeding into the wind.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, and
thank you
for joining us this afternoon on the Afternoon Magazine. We are coming up on the settlement prices fairly soon here in the next couple of moments. It is 1:49 here on WILL-AM. Our guest this afternoon was Larry Keller, president of Wild Birds Incorporated of Champaign-Urbana, or of Champaign. Our producers this afternoon were Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal. Henry Frayne was at the controls, and my name is Rita Schulte, and I was sitting in today for Celeste Quinn. And coming up next is Jason Croft with the settlement prices.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
from the Chicago Board of Trade on this Thursday afternoon. Futures finish the day like this. The numbers, and I just want to check something. The numbers like this in Chicago. September wheat down 4.5 cents today. Had a high price of 384, a low at 376. A settlement price there at 377, and they were off 4.5 today. December futures, a 399.5 high, low at 389.5, and a settlement price at 390.5, and they finished down 7. The March contract in Chicago, 417.25, the high, the low at 408. Settlement price for the March wheat at 409.25, down 7 cents. In the May contract now, 425.5, the high, the low at 417.5. A settlement price at 418. They're off 7.5 cents. In July futures in Chicago for the soft red winter wheat, 432.5, the high, low at 423.5. A settlement price at 424, down 6.75. Just as a reminder, you're listening to the Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. It's a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. And we're in the midst of the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Todd Gleason. I'm the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. September corn futures in Chicago, 227, the high, the low, and the settlement price, both the same, at 223. They were off 1 cent today. December futures down a half, a 240.25 high, low at 236.75. Settlement price there at 237.25. And the March futures, 254.5 on the high, low at 251. Settlement price at 251.25, off 1. May contract in the corn pit, 262.75 the high, the low at 59.5. And a settlement price at 259.5. They were down 1.25 for the day. July futures, 271 the high, the low at 67. Settlement price at 267.25 for the corn, down a penny and a quarter in the July futures. September's for next year, 277, the high, the low at 73.25. And their settlement price at $2.73. They finished down 2 cents on the day. Next year's December contract, 290.75, was off 3 cents on this Thursday afternoon. September oats, a 193.5 high, low at 190.5, settlement price at a buck at 190.5, and they were off 2.5 for the day. And December futures, a 201.5 high, low at 198, settlement price at a buck 99.75, and they were up 3 cents for the day. I think I read that September contract is down 2.5, and it was actually up 2.5. Now, the soy complex, September soybean futures like this, 236 on the high, low at 531.5. Settlement price at 532. They were up 2 for the day. November futures, 547.5 the high, the low at 41. Settlement price at 545.25, up 4.75. And January futures, $5.60 on the high, the low at 554.5. Settlement price at 558.75. They were up 4.75. March futures, 572 the high, low at 566. Settlement price at 569.75, up 4 in the May contract in the bean pit. 580.5 the high, the low at 75.75. Settlement price at 579.75. They were up 4.75. July futures, 591 the high, the low at $5.86.5, settled at 589.5, up a nickel. And the August contract at 593.5, settlement price up 5 cents. Next year, September up 498, or rather at 598, they were up 4.5 in the bean pit from Chicago on this Thursday. Meal futures finished like this. September contract, a 160.80 high price, low at 158.70. Settlement price at 168, or 160.80 even. They were up 330 for the day. October contract, a 159.50 high, low at 158.10. Settlement price at 158.60, up 130 in the September bean oil. 24.54, up 7 cents. October futures at 20.